Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
And good morning and welcome back to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm your host, Shelley Harrison, with another episode of Amplify Your Influence. And this show, it's a lively show featuring speakers, authors, and presenters who are on the cutting edge of top-level success in their speaking business or already there. And this show will bring you intriguing people across the country who have successfully amplified their influence on stage, television, and other media platforms. And today we are talking with our leading lady, Dr. Rosie Ward. She is the CEO of Salvio Partners on Women Lead Radio today. And a bit about Dr. Rosie, she is rehumanizing workplaces and supporting people to show up as brave leaders regardless of their role. Dr. Rosie is a keynote speaker, and we are so excited to have my company, Luminary Leaders, represent Dr. Rosie. She's also an award-winning author, an award-winning podcast host, and to top it off, she is a top leadership voice on LinkedIn. LinkedIn, ladies and gentlemen. Her hot podcast, Show Up as a Leader, won the Best People First Podcast Award from the People Forward Network and recently hit a milestone of listeners and is now reaching people in over 50 countries and counting. Her most recent book, Rehumanizing the Workplace, also won a Reader's Favorite Award. So I'm going to welcome Dr. Rosie. Happy Monday. Welcome to the show, and thank you for gracing us with your incredible wisdom on today's show. How are you, Dr. Rosie?
I am well, Shelley. Happy Monday to you as well. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm so excited to have you because every time we get on the phone or we have a conversation, it's always so enlightening. And I love watching your videos. You do videos on a regular basis. And I always watch for those and I listen to them and they just make my day. So, you know, kudos to you for keeping those videos just live and so passionate about what you do.
I'm so glad to hear that, Shelley. For the videos, just to add context, they're called Rosie in My Pockets, and they're like two minute little reminders of things that we forget about, and they're tools to get us back to, oh yeah, when I'm stuck, or reminders because we all need them. And so a new one goes out almost every Thursday on LinkedIn, and the archive is also on YouTube. So I just wanted to put that out there for what those videos actually are.
Oh, and I appreciate you saying that because I know that towards the end of it, too, I love what you say. And can you mention how you end it because it has to do with sparkle?
Yes. Well, my favorite color is sparkle, and it is a color, I assure you. But it really gets into the work we do with rehumanizing workplaces because what we found through our work and our research is so many of us dim our own sparkle out of fears, out of holding back, out of not being our authentic self. And so I always close all of my videos with never, ever let anyone dull your sparkle.
I love that. And I love hearing that because that's, like you said, they're 2 minutes, Rosie in My Pocket, and they're very, just so informative. So thank you again for keeping those going because those are, I'm sure those are, you know, very meaningful for so many people that watch them. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear that. Thank you.
Yes, most definitely. And, you know, Dr. Rosie, I know you're also passionate about helping companies and teams. Can you share with our audience what it means and takes to lead authentically and courageously in our lives and why it matters?
I am happy to. When you think about leading courageously and authentically, I'm going to just give one little background. Dr. Brené Brown and colleagues are now more than 12 years into research, and they continue to find, after asking C-suite leaders globally what needs to change or what needs to happen in this complex environment for us to be effective. And they keep coming back to what we need and what the future basically demands from us is that we develop and show up as braver leaders and that we create courageous cultures around us. And there's a whole lot packed into that. But to really bring it down to simple terms, the more disruptive our world gets, a newsflash, it's not going to get any less disruptive anytime soon. We use the acronym VUCA, V-U-C-A, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. It's not ours. It's been around since the 90s, but it's so applicable because it gives us language to help us understand our experiences. And basically, the more VUCA our world gets, the more disruptive our world gets, what happens is our instincts as a human being, we are hardwired to figure out how to look good and avoid looking bad. We are hardwired to avoid discomfort. We are hardwired to seek out familiarity. And so what we see happening and why the future demands braver leaders and courageous cultures is a product of the more disruptive or more VUCA our world gets, the more those self-protective innate biological instincts kick in. And we have this massive gap that just keeps widening and widening and widening. And we can sit back and hope that the world gets somehow less VUCA, which it's not going to.
We can dig
our heels in and have a temper tantrum and argue with reality, or we can go, okay, given that this is the world we live in, we need to fundamentally go about how we think about ourselves, how we think about leadership, how we think about development differently, and really, quite frankly, do the messy, cringy inner work that is necessary to heal those narratives that throw us into self-protective and close that gap so that we can be effective and thrive in spite of, you know, the disruption and the chaos and the volatility around us. And that's really fundamentally at the core of it. And what we see is so many organizations want to skip past that inner part because it's messy or it's cringy or it's not as tangible or whatever, but it's super, super critical. And so once upon a time, you know, things like self-awareness and emotional intelligence and communication skills and values and meaning-making systems were all labeled soft skills and like they didn't matter, but now they're widely being recognized as essential skills or power skills because they are a critical differentiator for us to be effective in this VUCA environment.
Absolutely. And, you know, thank you for pointing that out because I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, when they look at just the way, you know, to be authentic and lead courageously, it can be overwhelming because of, you know, other environmental issues. And, you know, I will say today is Earth Day, which is kind of relevant, but, you know, not completely on this topic. But I think that, you know, when it comes to work environments, because I know you work with a lot of companies and you see this where, you know, like you had pointed out, you know, there are some things that, you know, a lot of leaders don't get, and it's hard for them to really get to their entire team in a way that, you know, will help their overall culture within their organization. So when you know, the work focuses on helping individuals and organizations fuse their personal and professional lives, this is what you do. How do you navigate the challenges of maintaining boundaries while promoting integration?
That's a great question. And I want to actually piggyback on something you said that just popped in my head of when you think about, yes, it's Earth Day and picking up trash around the environment, but when we think about this work, we've got to deal with our own head trash. So we've got to clean up our head trash.
We do.
Right? It is. And I think, you know, this gets into the boundary part that you said, because here's the thing is that so often, you know, for example, what gets in our way of setting healthy boundaries is that head trash, is those self-limiting stories. It might be something like, well, gosh, you know, if I set boundaries or I advocate for my needs, then fill in the blank, I'm going to be labeled as difficult or I'm going to be labeled as selfish. And this is particularly true for people who identify as female, more so even than males, but, you know, I'm going to, or that my needs don't matter or whatever. So we've created some narrative from this programming we download in the first 10 or so years of our life that is still in the driver's seat today. And so I think about, like, for me, I mean, I've done all this work, but it doesn't mean I'm done. Like, our development is never done because that 10-year-old version of me still tries to creep in. And I'm like, oh, crap, there she is again. And I have to lean on the tools. The tools that we use with our clients are tools that I use. I always say, just because I facilitate this, like, anyone that pretends they figured it out is full of crap. Like, I use the tools because they work, and there's stuff that I lean on when my own humanity, because it will, tries to get in your way. And so for me, it's, you know, recognizing, okay, you know, how can I support my clients and also have sanity? And how do you call other people to greatness, but not try to save them from struggle or not try to take on their burden? And one of the things that I see a lot of leaders struggle with is they're actually trying to save people from struggle rather than recognizing that struggle is where growth happens, but it's how do we set people up for success to make it safe to lean into the cringiness of the struggle? And are we jumping in, for example, and doing something for them? Are we jumping in when things are uncomfortable? Or are we being controlling and nitpicking because we want it a certain way rather than holding space for a learning opportunity? And so I think so often we have to really be cognizant of what are our triggers where we're feeling uncomfortable, and where do we have opportunities for healthy boundaries so that we can show up as effective with the people we support, with the people we lead, and the people who matter to us in our life, and really for ourselves. I mean, self-care is an act of love. It's not being selfish, but so many people have really bizarre narratives around that, you know, they don't matter, or the whole, you know, take care of everyone else and not yourself. And then they're depleted and they wonder why they're crabby and they wonder why they're irritable. And, you know, the list goes on and on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And right when you said self-care, I'm thinking, you know, and I kind of equate this to when I was in the banking industry. So when I had a career in my corporate world, you know, I never really prioritized self-care. And I, you know, I was constantly in the grind, you know, trying to make all the goals and, you know, manage people. And it was tough to do that, you know. And I think now I see where it's more acceptable, I guess you could say, in the work environment, where people are really starting to put more emphasis on their self-care. So, yeah. So, and you're an expert on all of this. And, you know, we're going to get into more here. With you right now, we're going to take a quick moment to recognize one of our sponsors and partners, Dr. Rosie. So with Women Lead Radio, it is brought to you by Connected Women of Influence and our partner, National University. National University is proud to be one of the largest private nonprofit universities founded in 1971. The National University mission is to provide accessible, achievable higher education to adult learners. Today, National University educates students from across the U.S. and around the globe with over 170,000 alumni worldwide. Thank you for your support, National University, and to all our sponsors and partners. And now we're back to amplify your influence on Women Lead Radio with our leading lady, Dr. Rosie Ward. So, you know, Dr. Rosie, we talked about boundaries and, you know, maintaining and making sure, you know, that we're really taking in that self-care as leaders. And the next thing that I kind of want to get into, I know that as a Dare to Lead facilitator, the key principles from Brené Brown's work, what do you find most impactful in transforming leadership practices?
Well, one, I love the Dare to Lead curriculum, and I'm honored that I was able to train with Brené in 2019 and be a steward of her work and bring it out to the community. And quite frankly, it's a really nice feed into the other work we do, because I will say everything else we do also piggybacks on how do we help people get out of their own way. And so Dare to Lead's a piece, but we go further with various coaching and other programs and stuff as well. And so I will say, from a courage building standpoint, the biggest thing is trying to help kind of rewire the narrative and story and beliefs many of us have grown up believing around vulnerability being a weakness, being a bad thing, being about oversharing, and recognizing that vulnerability and courage are actually not opposite sides of the spectrum or opposite sides of the coin. They're one and the same. And it's really about, you know, vulnerability is the emotions we experience when we're faced with uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Well, welcome to a VUCA world. Mm-hmm. You're faced with vulnerability every day. And so Yeah. Right. And so the work we do with leaders and teams is equipping them with core and common language and tools to just, one, acknowledge current state, and then, two, make it less scary to lean into the cringe and lean into the discomfort of vulnerability, because it's never going to be comfortable. Uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure is never going to feel good, but can we normalize the discomfort, and can we create spaces that are safe enough for people to do that? So it's things like, you know, giving them skills and tools to not tap out of tough conversations, tools and skills to continue to lean into curiosity when our instincts tell us to double down on our assumptions, judgments, and righteousness. And so really, because sitting in that space is what's required for innovation, sitting in that space is what's required for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. It's what's required for ethical decision-making, for feedback, and for more. And so really being able to equip people with how do we have tools to lean into the discomfort? How do we have tools to get us back to a courageous version of ourselves when that self-protective, you know, scared 10-year-old version of ourselves wants to kick in? That's the work that is super impactful and powerful. And obviously doing it by yourself is great, but you can't take a changed person and put them into an unchanged environment and expect any lasting results. And so doing this work as a group, doing this work as a team, doing this work as a leadership team is super impactful because it does create that sense of community, that peer, that shared language, et cetera.
Oh my gosh. And I mean, what a great opportunity, you know, to be able to work with Brené Brown and just all of those things that you just mentioned. I mean, I resonate so well with that. And I think, you know, just looking at, you know, the kind of the dynamic of being a leader and really being able to be yourself, but in the same token, you know, take on and make the work environment pleasant and, you know, where people can be themselves and, you know, take on responsibilities that, you know, that they may not otherwise take on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, when we think about this notion of creating courageous cultures, really what we're doing is we're trying to create environments where that need to self-protect, or to use Brené's language, to armor up, is not necessary, nor is it rewarded. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's this myth that somehow effective teams or like having high psychological safety on teams means that it's all Pollyanna and unicorn and rainbows, but nothing could be further from the truth. It's really like the most effective teams are leaning in with courageous vulnerability. They are having the difficult conversations. They're not tapping out of you know, the tough stuff. They're admitting when they've made a mistake. They are asking for help and accepting help. It's all the things that we need. And if you are a formal leader on the team, because we believe everyone can show up as a leader, you set the tone. And so it's super, super critical that we think about developing, you know, shifting from a traditional quote unquote leadership development to a people development strategy. And for those that have formal leadership, there is an additional level of support they need because of the influence they have over culture, over psychological safety, and over ultimately the employee experience.
Oh, exactly. And I know you are an advocate for creating psychologically safe cultures. Can you explain to our audience, as far as, you know, how leaders can cultivate and sustain psychological safety within their teams, especially in a, you know, fast-paced environment or high-pressure environment?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, psychological safety, for people who aren't familiar with it, is really basically creating an environment where people can, you know, take those interpersonal risks, where they can be authentic, where they can say, you know, I made a mistake, I need help, they're having the difficult conversations. Like, that's what, they're not in that self-protective mode. And so from a leadership standpoint, it's things like acknowledging, like, hey, I know this is difficult, but I appreciate you speaking up, or I want to make sure I hear from everybody, or it's, you know, it's really taking the time to normalize this is uncomfortable. It's modeling it first. One of the things that we do on our team is every Friday we do a reflection from the week and, you know, looking at, you know, what went well from the week. And then we do F Up Fridays. And we look at what was our biggest squiggle, detour, or misstep from the week. And here's the key. What valuable learning did it bring? And as the formal leader of the team, I go first and I model it and go, here's where I screwed up, you guys. And guess what? Our best process improvements have come from FF Friday shares. And so as a leader, it's things like, hey, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I know this wasn't hard. I want to hear from everybody, or saying, we're not going to get this perfect and that's okay. Or saying, you know what, let's look at the minimum viable product, or, you know, MVP of this version, or what we need done this week, knowing it's going to be iterative. So it's really intentionally and explicitly stating you don't expect perfection. It's rewarding people or acknowledging people when they lean into stuff that is tough. It's being clear with expectations. It's having those feedback conversations. It's modeling the courage that you want other people to do and normalizing it for them. And and acknowledging and rewarding them when they do lean into it.
That is a great practice. And how long is your team? How long have you been doing this?
Let's see. We started the deliberate F Up Friday about 2 years ago, I think.
Oh my goodness. So you've been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
I would imagine that it is a game changer, because what you're doing is you're kind of setting the tone for your, you know, for your team, and letting them know that it's a safe place, you know, to really be bold and vulnerable. Right?
Yeah. 100%. And I will say that it's even gotten to the point that, like, you know, we use Slack for our messaging tool, and it'll even be like, oh, it's F Up Friday on a Monday, or F Up Friday on a Tuesday. Like, we don't hold it back until Friday. So, because it's just like we're freely admitting.
But you're bravely admitting. Say that again. You started to say something.
Oh no, I just said so. We're bravely admitting throughout the week. Like, we're not waiting. We're just saying, oops, that didn't go so well, and you know, what can we learn from it? And you know, and sometimes, you know, we have to hit a reset. And you know, and I think that in this VUCA environment, you know, everyone has different cadences of how they meet with their team. I think one of the things that I find is so many people, they're not touching base intentionally enough. Like, it could be a short 5 to 15 minute huddle on a daily basis with your team members just to check in of where are we today. And so often, like, people can go weeks and they never talk to their leader, and they're not clear on priorities. And so I just think, you know, having a conversation with your team of, are we as connected as we could be? What would be differently? And play around. Like, one team that I used to lead, we only connected 3 times a week, and that worked for that team. With Saleo partners, you know, we need to connect daily, but it's short and sweet. And it's like, let's just, you know what, here's a new curveball that happened, and we look at what are our glass balls, what are our wood balls, and what are our rubber balls, and we'll reprioritize. Nope, you know what, that's a wood ball. This new glass ball has popped up. Move that thing till next week or later in the week, and it just helps us. Being a small business, there's so much that comes at us that you can feel like you need to do it all, and just having some deliberate practices around how we prioritize, and we always say client deliverables and self-care are our glass balls, non-negotiables, and everything else then can be negotiated, whether or not it's a wood ball or a rubber. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, and that's such a great practice. And I would imagine that it fosters employee retention too, I think, and a culture that is, you know, just open-minded and fast and forward-thinking, you know, in terms of the way that people feel, and they want to be a part of that. They want to contribute and be, you know, vocal about things so that they can, you know, make it a better environment for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. And here's the thing is that I can see, like, when my team is getting, when we're talking about, like, syncing up on the daily task or what we're getting done and making sure we're on the same page, and I start seeing people getting really stressed and they're frantic, and it's like, okay, time out a second. Let's just go through what's on your list, and then let's just mark them. Glass, wood, whatever. And you can see them calm down and go, oh, okay, that's a rubber ball. Okay, so if that drops, I'm not, like, you know, going to be in trouble, or I'm not, you know, going to, like, no. Like, sometimes we have to let the rubber balls go. Like, no one's going to die if they don't get an email letter from us this week, or no one's going to die if we only post on social media. Like, you know, so it's the stuff that's like, is it helpful? Yes. At the grand scheme of things, is it worth someone's stress or well-being? No, no one's going to care that much. Let it go. And so, and I think we don't have those conversations enough. We just keep trying to ask people to do more and do more and do more. And it's not helpful. It's not productive. But when you are willing to reset and shift priorities, people feel seen and cared for.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why you do this work. And I know that, you know, you maybe you can mention too the work that you do with companies, because this is, you know, this is your, you know, your whole world in terms of working with organizations and companies, and also being, you know, a podcaster and, you know, writing your books and so forth. But when it comes to the work that you do with companies, Dr. Rosie, can you kind of share a little bit about, you know, what it is that you do when you go into a company and you start working with them, and give us a kind of a snapshot of that?
Absolutely. I will say it varies because every organization is different in terms of where they are on their rehumanizing journey. I will say if we were going to start kind of from like a bigger picture scratch, like with some of our clients that we do a lot of different stuff with, it's helping them clarify their purpose beyond their mission and articulate it and help employees feel connected to it and aligned with it, and also operationalizing their core values so they're not just words on a website, but they're actually tangible, concrete behaviors that people use as a filter for how they show up, how they interact. And we call that the lighthouse. And so often people haven't done the work to that level, and they wonder why there's misalignment. And then what happens is you have, you know, people, especially I will say millennials and Gen Zs, if we look at the data, really want to be associated with a company with a strong sense of purpose. And they might get all excited in the interview process. And then your first year turnover is ridiculously high because they're realizing, but wait, when I go to my particular department or area, it's nothing like what was sold to me. And so we do work to really help shore that up and help it be a lived experience consistently throughout the organization. We do a ton, obviously, with developing leaders to be more effective and to be future ready and to really close this gap of their humanity in the VUCA world. We do a lot of work with team cohesion and team effectiveness and how to help them get to the next level and how to elevate performance. Those are kind of the three high-level buckets. And so depending on what the organization is, we might, you know, we have one organization that we do a lot of work. We've created a network of culture ambassadors, and we have a very systematic program and development we do to help their culture be tended to like a garden. We have other clients that really just want the support on the leadership development end, and we help them with succession planning and coaching and then kind of everything in between. But those are the three main buckets that a lot of our work falls in. And, you know, some organizations have us on a year-over-year retainer, and obviously we love that work because we can really be thoughtful about our approach. And others might bring us in for, let's say, a 6 to 8 month contract to do some developmental work, and then they might reach back out to us periodically. So and then, you know, you got everything in between. So it's just and some might just say, hey, I want to start with like a team building. I want to look at our lighthouse and our Y operating system and our working geniuses and help us be effective. And so it might start with just like a one-off team workshop, and then it might build from there. So it's really kind of all over the map, not a one-size-fits-all. We really try to do what makes sense for wherever a company is.
And it's very comprehensive, and it kind of breaks down the silos, you know, where I think a lot of us in the corporate world, you know, those of us that have been in it, and those that are in it now, where, you know, it's there are so many different departments within an organization, and bringing those teams together. And I think of, you know, like EOS, which is the entrepreneurial operating system, and it's kind of foundational, but it's also similar to, you know, just having systems in place and making sure that, you know, everybody on the team is in the right seat. But this is, I mean, you do extraordinary work, Dr. Rosie, and I really applaud you for, you know, just the work that you do. I know when you do your Rosie and, you know, In My Pocket, I love watching that, and I want to encourage people, where can they find you? Where's the best place to find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. It's Rosie Ward. You can go directly to our company website, which is Salveo, SalveoPartners.com. You can go to drrosieward.com. That's D-R and then R-O-S-I-E-Ward.com. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook is Dr. Rosie Ward, and Dr. Rosie also on YouTube. So any of those places is where we try to put value and content out there for people, and people can find and learn more.
That is so awesome. And I encourage people to reach out to Dr. Rosie. She had just mentioned, and we'll make sure that it's in the show notes too, so that people can reach you and just really follow you and just look at all the goodness that you're bringing to the corporate world. And I know in terms of the show, Dr. Rosie, we are out of time. Although that is our show for today, we hope you gain new ideas and wisdom from our powerful guest, Dr. Rosie. Thank you, Dr. Rosie, for being our leading lady today on Women Lead Radio on Amplify Your Influence. And a special thanks to all of our listeners in the U.S. and our international listeners and followers, too. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio show on Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time and Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time. It's been my absolute pleasure to be your host today, and thank you for listening. And remember to build your influence authentically and compassionately.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.